You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
In this episode, Lynn Witt leads a session entitled Reinventing Journalism at SOCON 07 and UnConference, which took place February 10th, 2007 at Kennesaw State University.
All right. Well, my name is John Crow. I have a podcast and a blog, and it's mostly about new religions. And what I'm interested in doing is learning more about building community and production for it, getting people involved. I'm looking at going to grad school this in Amsterdam at the end of the year, and there's a whole new community based on the study of esotericism, and I'm looking on how we can use this technology to pull people together in both the United States and Europe to collaborate.
Good. We're talking to somebody about a job here whose dissertation is on emerging church and blogs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting. I hope we get him here.
My name is Nick Willits. I'm I lead the R&D lab, R&D group of Morse Digital Works, which is a division of Morse Communications, which is a big newspaper group. We own Athens, Savannah, and Augusta, the newspapers in Georgia, the Jacksonville paper. I'm interested in everything that comes across the plate moving forward in journalism.
And tell them what you do on the side for your own, you know, vlogging friends and stuff.
I also do work with tattoo artists, and I'm actually, when I began all this, what I was telling Lynn about was I was actually a photojournalist originally, and that's actually the guy that's sitting on the screen hired me. Who's Rob Curley. On the side, I do a lot of, I engage in all kinds of arts. I do photography, I paint, and I also may actually, and I do a lot of work with tattoo artists. So that's why.
My name is Kathy Shields, and I'm probably the odd man out here because I'm an educator. I'm an educator in elementary education. I have a technology business background from like 20 years ago. And I'm like one of the few people in the school that podcast, that blog, and I'm getting my master's degree in elementary ed, and I don't understand why the professors don't have blogs when they're teaching us how to write, and that writing is so important.
What program are you in? What school system?
I go to Brunel, the MAT program.
But what school system are you teaching?
Oh, Fulton County.
Okay, because I have this $46,000 grant where we're teaching teachers how to blog and Cobb. But we should. We can actually give you some money maybe if you want to be a mentor for us.
I will.
So you should.
It.
You should plug into us. Yeah.
That's why I wrote. I wrote you a little note thing.
Oh, good. Yeah, we should. We should talk. Yeah.
Mark Chernesky, web development director, downtown Turner Broadcasting. So involved with CNN, Sports Illustrated, NASCAR, PGA Tour. Some new product development, look at some of the niche markets that are out there and we're expanding.
Now, Turner's doing an interesting thing that I had blogged about is that instead of going out always for the biggest market, they're looking for smaller markets and willing to pick up a lot of smaller markets. Is that correct, or did I get that wrong?
Yeah, one that's out now that we launched last fall. It's called Play On Sports, which caters towards long tail college sporting events, primarily the ACC right now. So looking at tens and hundreds of viewers, parents, friends, alumni that will never see a women's lacrosse team on TV, they can get it as a pay-per-view or VOD.
Just a quick word about the long tail. The long tail is that used to be 10% of all the records, for example, were listened to by 99% of the people. Now you have this long tail, thanks to iTunes and everything else, that anyone who's ever recorded a record is available way out on this long tail of this curve. And collectively, every one of their 99,000 songs has been downloaded by somebody. And so things that didn't have a market before and didn't have an audience before now have an audience. And it's a long, enduring audience. And again, singularly, it doesn't mean much, but a lot of times you have to think like collectively, It means a lot. And I know from the MoveOn.org thing where 96,000 people were making phone calls for MoveOn.org, for example. And if each one of them got one person to go out to the polls, that's what won the last election, because they were doing it for 30 districts. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times what you're doing here, you think, I'm not doing much. There's this old expression of, put a straw on the camel's back, which I tried to explain to people in a foreign country one time. Really got it. But anyhow, but we were trying to end gun violence one time, and somebody said, well, I know I can't end it, but if every time I throw a straw up there, it might break the back, the camel's back of violence. And this is, we can really be straw carriers and kind of throw it up there. So,
My name is Pat, and I have a background in print and radio journalism, and I've kind of gotten away from that because of a variety of reasons, and I want to get back into journalism, but I want to do it electronically, and I want to do it where I am.
Okay.
So I don't want to have to do it in a building. I don't want to have to do it in a particular city.
So you want to do it, and then I don't know if, Nick and I'm sorry.
Mark.
And I don't know if I know Nick probably is looking to figure out how to get, audience to get involved in producing it. I don't know if Turner is.
We've got a product called iReport, which is user submitted content, which is filtered. So, it's submitted, it comes in, it's reviewed. One of the problems that CNN has is there's a brand. So, everything has to, you can't just take anything and throw it out there. It's got to be vetted. Through some approval process.
That's what the newspapers fight against too. Yes. They have a stronger brand. Okay. They fight against them.
So at some point we have to talk and figure out how what would inspire you to do stuff and what they need from you, kind of thing.
My name is David Fortune. I currently do freelance web development. I'm pretty fresh out of college, so I'm still just trying to find my way.
Yeah. And what you're in with who?
I do freelance
work. Oh, freelance work. Okay.
Hi, my name is John Goss, and I work for a company that I feel is out of touch with the blog community, and it's a startup company, so I feel they very much should be a part of it. But I work there, so in my spare time, I run a blog magazine that's based on the music, media, and arts called Soul Press, and that's mainly why I'm here.
Okay.
What's the URL?
Soulpress.net. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm Shelby Heisman. I'm finishing my PhD at Georgia Tech in mechanical engineering, but I was communications director for the Young Democrats of Atlanta for a year and a half, and then now trying to go towards a career in public policy as far as technology is concerned, and my interest in this kind of arena of journalism is just politically and for social change, what citizen journalism can do in terms of the ability to disseminate and kind of shine the light on things. And also, from my own personal perspective, trying to write about fairly complex technical information that's rather dry and wonky and put it into more of a popular context.
Okay, I'm going to just, because I'm fascinated by this, and I mentioned it yesterday and some other people. Here it is, a Soul Press, but I'm going to just go. And you talked about unheard voices and other perspectives. So this was a blog that I found. And so it's Vancouver Experiment, ex-prostitutes cover trial. So up in Vancouver, there is the serial murder. And he killed 26 prostitutes in Vancouver have been killed. The newspaper went out and did it traditionally. They just had their regular people, covering it. Well, this citizen journalism site called Orato went and hired two former Vancouver prostitutes to cover the trial. They knew the women, and they knew the street life, and of course they're going to cover it in a lot different way than the traditional journalists are. Now, he even says in here, he says, well, they're not journalists, and I don't know about journalism, but I think in the end there's got to be a lot more truth that comes out of that. And I think this is just kind of one example of you could do this with anything, from rural farmers to prostitutes to anyone, if you just kind of think of it that way. So,
My name is Hillary, and I started I've been working with Cox Interactive Media before we started Yell.com, which had one of the first online communities really in the early 90s, or mid to late 90s actually. We started with blogs and podcasts. We did Yell Radio, featuring Southern culture and music and all this stuff. I moved on from there to work with a company in California. I did the Olympics, the Summer Olympics here, and one in Australia, doing online community for NBC Sports. And I worked with Robin Williams on his online community for a while. And, met the guy who started The Well, and Howard Rheingold, very big. And he's got a community called Brainstormed.
Smart Pond.
It's amazing. Then came back here. I currently work for Network Communications, and they do like home improvement and home and lifestyle magazines. So I do all the online content for magazines, and I'm currently trying to get them to move into, you know, modern day on the web. And so I've got that thing between, you know, print people moving into the web and doing blogs and all that kind of stuff. But on the side, I work with, I have a couple of my own sites, and then I also work with a group called United Professionals, which started by Barbara Ehrenreich, and they've got a forum, actually one you'd be really interested in. They linked up with Democracy, I think it's called Democracy in Action, and it's actually a whole back-end system that was created for nonprofits and political organizations that helps them keep track of numbers and do you know, donations and all kinds of stuff like that. So it's a really cool back-end program you can tack on to a community, you know, blog. United Professionals is using WordPress.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm going to jump forward, Jenny. Is that right?
I'm so sorry that I corrected.
Sorry that I got it wrong. That's all right. That's all right. I need to be corrected. But Jenny is kind of working on stuff. So there you are sitting right next to him, and he's basically Barbara Enreich's nickel and dime stuff. You know, there's a deep connection there, but you wouldn't see it necessarily. And she's going to tell you how she thinks you can maybe see it. Are you or not?
Yeah, sure. I'll be happy to. Yeah. I mean, do you want me to wait until it's
my turn? No, I'll do it now. I'll jump in.
Well, actually, in my night job, is the nice way to call it, I'm interested in the semantic web. And the piece of the semantic web that I'm interested in is making personal data sources open and available so that they can be part of the collective intelligence. So, you know, I see as Web 2.0 is all about the community, but it requires interaction. It requires a lot of work. And the semantic web is going to be the next version of that, where the machines can do the work for you. They can go out and search and be your agent and, you know, combine data sources and help you and do the mashups for you. All you have to do is figure out what are the interesting data sources, and then they'll combine them. So is that what you want to
do? To me, it's fascinating because it opens up all kinds of possibilities.
Yeah, there's too much information out there. You need to have agents help you whittle it down and make sense of it.
Like in Chris Anderson's book, The Long Tail, which you're talking about, he talks about filters for filters.
Yep.
Because the website's a, you know, filter of information, but now there's so many of them, you need to narrow that down.
Exactly.
So I'm Patrick Ball, and about 3.5 years ago, I was sitting in Amsterdam, very happy. And having been in Europe for 14 years, and my CEO walked in and said, how would you like to run our U.S. operation? And I said, sure, why not? Time to go home. And I did that up until about 4 months ago. I was the president of a local web hosting interactive marketing company here called Via Networks. And about 4 months ago, the new owners were British, and I decided that we didn't agree on strategy, so I left. And now I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm started my own company, and I'm doing essential consulting with companies about what's your web presence strategy, what are you trying to accomplish on the web, how effective it is today. Doing a lot of analysis using the free tools out there and coming in and saying, hey, gee, look, and then saying, you know what, I can help you do that by reaching out to networks of young freelance developers to get the work done so they don't have to go and pay Def6 a lot of money. And but I love Mike Hogan. I'm also on the board of directors of TAG, and I'm the 2007 chair for the Georgia Technology Summit, and our keynote speaker is Chris Anderson. So for anybody who's interested in hearing Chris come and speak, he will be speaking on the 7th or 28th of February at Park Galleria. Who's the dean of computing at Georgia Tech, and a whole bunch of other things, including the top 40 innovative companies in Georgia, as selected by a fairly prestigious.
What was this, the Georgia? Which one was this again?
What we do is we go out and look for companies that are creating innovative technology. We had over 100 applications this year, and we picked the top 40 companies that we think, for example, 2 years ago, JBoss was one of our top 40. Ivivity was one of our top 40. New Bridges was one of our top 40 companies that you now see pretty widely. Of course, some of them are gone now, too. But, the top 10 get to actually do a presentation during the summit, 3-minute VC type, 3 slides, 3 minutes on and off. But it's a fairly prestigious award. All 40 will be there talking about what they're doing. So it's an opportunity to find out what, you know, leading edge technology is happening in Georgia.
Okay.
You know, I live in Buckhead, a couple of young kids, young wife, you know. Midlife crisis, so I'm good. Keep me young. That's me.
Okay. And George Daniels is a professor at University of Alabama, and he's actually involved in a really interesting thing in Anniston, at the Anniston Star. They've got these community fellows graduate program right in the Star, and he's helping run most of that, right? I think, or a big part of it.
That's probably not quite the right word, but first of all, in the interest of full disclosure, mention I was supposed to be in the podcasting session, but when they will find it, when the door was locked or something.
Anyway,
I just kind of saw this door open and walked in, and there was yours, so here I am. But I think I left my stuff from the lunch room with the Lanyards. Right now, my mind's kind of back over there. I'll go back over there in a minute. But it's good to be here. We are trying to do some different things with the journalists who are coming through this graduate program that Lynn mentioned. And one of those is to talk about conceptualizing community journalism beyond just putting it in the newspaper. It's and putting it on the air in front of a newscast. There are new ways of telling stories, and so that's one of the challenges that we gave the students coming in the program. They may not actually finish a product by the end of the semester, but to at least conceptualize that product in terms of the way they're telling the story that they discovered in East Alabama, in the Calvin County, Alabama area, or beyond. These students are, we hope, going to go out and be leaders in news organizations, and that, of course, assumes most of them will probably be mainstream organizations. But the idea is that we're seeding the journalism profession with these new thinking folks who will have understanding of not just how to tell a story, but how to tell a story in a different way. And more importantly than just the telling of a story is how the industry has to change as the viewers and the readers are changing in the way they get their news. And so many things that were talked about this morning are mentioned in the trade publications, but not often enough in our classrooms, even at the graduate level. So my purpose for coming over, in spite of just getting over a cold and still getting over a cold, not contagious, fortunately, anymore, was to try to find out what are some of these new experiences and to connect with the .com folks, if you will, if they are those still left around. More importantly, the new venture people, because new ventures don't always mean .com. And I've already heard some good ideas just in the last minute and a half that you guys have been sitting here. The other thing I wanted to mention is I started a couple of blogs, one related to the program, but one on my own, just talking about things that are crossing my mind. And even that has put me in a whole different role. I'm not just the professor talking, I'm the person talking. And I often wonder what kind of audience I have. They may not have posted to the site, but I found they visited the site and they sent me emails later telling me about what was online. So I'm really curious how that's evolving for other folks, and that was one of the attractions I had to this gathering. So I thank you guys for having us over.
What's the name of the blog?
The main one, personal blog, is Bama Producer, because I was a news producer at TV. I actually worked here in Atlanta for several years. BamaProducer.blogspot.com. The one that I've been updating today, because it relates specifically to community journalism, is com, C-O-M-J, exchange.blogspot.com. And I've gotten used to updating at conferences now a little bit more than I had before. And that's the that's really old. No, stop right there. Why isn't that sometimes the older versions of your blog load first? Anybody?
Because it's Google. I Googled it, and
it just went to that store.
That was your...
Okay, yeah, this is one
I... So this one now, I just went after and just clicked on that. But when I first Googled it, this was one of your higher-up stories in there that people are reading for whatever reason.
There's all kinds of stuff on there from different research conferences, but the experience this month, particularly 2007, I've really been trying to post there at least a couple of times a week, sometimes several times a day. And just going through that experience has taught me a lot. I'm hoping to make the blogging 201 session next session to learn more about that. And just talking to other bloggers, you know, about their audiences, the communities they create. I started the ComJ one with the idea of having an exchange about community journals. Well, that hasn't happened as much as I would like for it to happen. Some of it may be the way I'm running the blog. So that's
one. Well, let's hold that thought, because that is really the one important thing. It didn't happen the way I thought it was going to happen. And we're going to come back to that right after Brad real quickly tells us a little bit about himself.
I'm Brad Charlotte. I am the coordinator of the journalism program at Northern Kentucky University. That's kind of a traditional journalism program, but we've just moved into a new college called the College of Informatics, and we've just started a new program called Media Informatics. We hired a fella from MIT who ran the MIT Technology Review website to be the first professor of media informatics. He's building a content management system that, among other things, is going to host, at least it's planned this way, that it will host citizen journalists. And so that's one of the reasons I'm here, is to try to get some ideas on how to help make that happen.
Okay. So I'm going to let somebody else pick up and talk about what you heard or what you're thinking about, and, you know.
One of the things I'm interested in is I've got a couple of blogs, and I'm on Blogspot, but I want to move into video blogging. I've got the gear, and I'm starting to learn about it, and I'm starting to do it, and I couldn't do that, so I went to Kineva, and because I think I can upload video there, and I'm starting to learn how to do that. Now I got two blogs running, and I'm trying to get people to move to the other. But I mean, the transition to video blogging is very common. I mean, the editing, the whole process is mind-boggling. Someone suggested I download Adobe Premiere Elements last night, and I was up till 3:30 this morning doing editing.
Just the pinnacle.
And it was fun, but complicated. So where does the novice go to begin that journey?
Yeah, I would highly recommend Blip.tv. I've been using them. CNN uses them for the iReport backend. The nice thing about Blip.tv is that you basically host the videos there for free. It's like YouTube, except that you can attach whatever kind of Creative Commons license you want to the content, whereas YouTube locks it down. You know, it's like, this is ours, it's in Flash. There are new mashup services that let you now edit, you know, YouTube content, but Blip.tv lets people pick the QuickTime RAW file or the WMV and relicense it as you want, and then you can just sort of cross-post it to your blog quite easily.
But that's a good question you had, too. Where do you get training? I mean, what are you doing at Morris, and what are you doing at Turner? You say, I want you to do iReport, but what are you doing to help people who actually want to do some stuff?
There's a pretty good tutorial at freevlog.net or from or org, I don't know. They don't tell you about the actual process of making the video, but they do handle, once you've got a video, here's how you need to set up your blog and your feed and whatnot. In terms of the actual technical tutorial.
I ran into Blip.tv, and I understand it, but you know, the concept of editing and, you know, actually getting it to be ready when you're ready to upload it, because I'm doing like, you know, 15, 20, 30 second clips. So last night I was at dinner and I was doing a lot of video, and I ended up to like 15, 20 clips. So how do I make that into something that's acceptable for the web and makes sense?
Well, you have to teach yourself.
Because and it's time consuming to do video editing, and there's people who have done it for a long time, and that's when we did it.
Microsoft.com also has some, if you Google Windows Movie Maker tutorial, there's some on Microsoft. I taught a workshop on video podcasting at Georgia Progressive Summit. And I don't even use Windows, but since most of the audience does, I just went and took some screenshots, and in 5 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty drag and drop.
It's drag and drop. Do you know how to use iMovie and stuff like that? Or
do you have a Mac? Yeah, Pinnacle's really just like iMovie.
Well, actually, the one I was going to say is the free is a really Windows. Standard one is Avid Free. There's an Avid, which is
AVID.
Yeah. And Avid is basically the big, it's Final Cut's competition, essentially. But
and most professional journalists use Avid.
Movie makers use Avid. The full version, but there's an Avid Free that's very powerful. It's just getting used to its interface and stuff like that.
And if you want to do sort of like a little bit more amateur stuff, but a step up from real amateur stuff, where you can actually move stuff around and it's all drag and drop too, but with a little bit more smooth, is something called Serious Magic. It's a program, you have to pay for it, but you can, you know, you put a little microphone on yourself and you can put the camera out there and it'll do all kind of visual digital stuff behind you and set up screens for you behind you, and it's drag and drop. Like I said, you can drag in all your different kind of media, and it's not bad. You know, it's really not bad. It's not professional, but David Weiner, I don't know if any of you know who he's kind of the guy who started podcasting and all, you know, he says, look, it's like organic food. You're going to get the occasional stick and rock in there, but it's good for you anyhow. So I don't know if that's true.
And that's the part I was actually going to say is one of the things we have a consulting group actually that's built into Morse DigitWorks that works with all the properties. And we're actually hiring a video person to go as a consultant to each of the business units and help them learn how to do it, because we used to have a videographer. And we found that that's not really important. We need more to actually understand how to get stuff up, how to edit it and stuff like that. But one of the things that we're actually really discussing with people a lot is don't worry about being super slick and professional. I mean, most of YouTube is not super slick and professional and it's getting watched. It's scary, but like I did one thing that was like professional that I thought I did was like a great editing job on. And then I photographed an airsoft fight at the tattoo shop. And you know what's getting the hits? Yeah. The airsoft fight at the tattoo shop.
Yes, then somebody ought to make a sketch for this, you know, where one axis is production quality and it's content quality. And there's sort of like an inverse relationship. There's probably a minimum of each that you want to achieve. Yeah. But you can kind of trade off one for the other.
And the best thing I've ever found with my video editing is just like she said, it's just you just keep doing it. You just keep doing it.
Yeah. And it's fun. It's time consuming. People don't realize, you know, the print people, I think they want the journalists to come in and then make a nice piece of video, and it takes them 7 hours to do it.
Yeah, along those lines, I'm in a school, but when they first let you upload audio for free, in like Podomatic and things like that, before they let you put the video up, which is kind of happened in the last couple months. Everybody in school is like, well, we don't want to just do audio, we want to do video. And I'm like, well, it's a lot easier to do just audio, than it is to do video. And it can be just as effective. So just because, if you want to start somewhere, I would start with an audio blog and have that going on. Some people actually...
Which, by the way, since you brought that up, that's the other part. It's actually better to get your audio right than it is to get your video right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something that bothers the human ear when watching something, that it's better to get your audio done and set up right than to actually worry about getting the video looking perfect.
Right. I think that's why people are willing to watch programs on an iPod, is that, if you've got good sound, we're used to sometimes sitting in the back of the theater. We can take a small picture in our head as long as things going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if there's any one thing you're going to turn off, it's if it starts crackling or your voice is going up and down.
Little dots are okay. Little dots.
So get Audacity. And just play.
Yeah. Do you know Audacity?
John Cut.
Yeah, Audacity.
JohnCut.com is online video editing.
That's really cool, too.
I've had trouble with that. I tried to do it in my class one day.
I
was
sure about last night. So.
Okay.
Jump cut, and iSpot.
Is there such a thing as like a video camera that you can wear on your body? If you want to do something.
Duct tape.
I like to do mountain climbing. I thought it'd be kind of cool.
Yes.
You have video of that.
I just saw that on Crunch Gear a couple days ago. There's like a little camera that has a little helmet strap mount kind of thing.
That's what I was thinking.
There's one website like SpyNet or something like that. It's all spy surveillance gear, but for consumers, and one of them is a headset with a video camera.
But if you're also looking for just a small one, I bought an Aptech one that I love, and it doesn't have the best quality video. It's like a cheap Korean Aptech video thing, and it's like this big and works off of flash memory, and it is the funnest thing to tape with because it's like that big. You're not standing there holding this thing. You're just sitting there like this.
You can't even close it.
Yeah.
The Noki 1300s, I've seen somebody use that. That's really nice stuff. Just 1300 bar, 3000 bucks.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice size.
That's a great size. That's a good size right there.
It's a new Sony, but it's got a 30 gig hard disk.
And that's the best in the world.
No tapes.
Wow.
Can you strap that to your
film?
Yeah.
You just drag files over.
Yeah.
It's in the world.
Yeah.
How much is that?
I got it at Circuit City for about $600.
$600.
Wow.
You get one,
so worth it.
You get one of those, and you'll never want to touch a videotape again.
And it's all touch screen, so you can sit here. You can edit on the camera, or you can edit off. It comes with software, but the editing software is really complicated. At least for me, it's complicated. Maybe for somebody else, it's easy. I'm actually doing my mother is 88, so every Sunday I go over to spend 2 hours with her, put this on a tripod, and have conversations with her.
What a good idea.
So trying to get a whole library stuff for her.
That kind of stuff is citizen media is really important because otherwise it gets lost. You know.
Go ahead. I got a question. It would change the subject though.
That's all right.
Well, earlier we were talking about the blogs and stuff. I'm interested in how do you get a multi-contributor blog going and get people contributing interesting and
you mean
useful
technology?
Get them inspired. Yeah, technology-wise, it's easier to get WordPress and log them in.
I'm going to just tell you a couple things. There's a guy, and I always pronounce his name wrong, but Yoshi Benkler. He's written a paper called Sharing Nicely, but he's written a book called The Wealth of Nations. He talks about that people want to share, and they share all the time. I mean, so if you ask somebody, for example, how do I get to the bus station to get downtown, they'll tell you. Now, on the other hand, if you ask them, can you give me a ride downtown, they might or they might not give you a ride downtown. So one of the things you got to think of in terms of granularity, how much do you want them to do? Okay. And that's a really important thing. So there's like Minnesota Public Radio has public insight journalism. Now they're big. They got 13,000 people who they send emails to. They get about one email a month, and they ask them to contribute or to help out, but it's very small. And the other thing is, when you do these things, you want to make sure that it's what they want to do, when they want to do it, and how much time they want to put into it. If you can set it up that way, and like that's the Linus Torvald thing about, you know, it sounds unfair to only do 1 hour of work and get 10 hours of return, but it works. So if you can figure that out, that they figure, you know, so all these people are doing like Wikipedia. They do that, first of all, this is the other thing you have to remember, that there's very discrete numbers of people who actually go and help. Even in Wikipedia, it's got 1 million entries worldwide, but only 900 people actively are part of that community. So if you get a smaller community, your chances of getting a lot of people to contribute get smaller and smaller. But you have to have a mission, and you can't sucker the people. If they think that you're doing this so that they can make more money off of you, they're not going to do it, except that they're an academic. If you're an academic, here's an academic model. It's crazy.
That's because I'm interested.
Academic model is I write a paper, I turn it over to volunteers, they edit it, then some big publishing company publishes it, owns the ownership to it, and if I want my own copy of it, I got to go and buy a copy off of them. So, I mean, some things are so completely ridiculous, but by and large, that's the kind of thing you got to think about. You really, and this is one of the things that Jay talks about, motivation is really, really important, because if you don't get your motivation right, you won't get the help you need. And again, so you have somebody like Jimmy Wales, he's not doing anything for himself out there. He says, my mission is to make sure that everyone in the world gets high-quality information in every language. That's a beautiful mission. And so 800 people around the country You can spend day and night working on that mission. Now, there's other things that you can do, you know, but, you know, I'm sure you can manipulate people, and I'm sure they will be manipulated. But that's a formula I kind of like, of finding what people want to do. And the other thing, newspaper next, there's this thing out that for newspapers on, and it builds out of Christian Clayton's stuff on disruptive technologies. But he says the same thing. You got to find out what people can't get done by themselves and help them get it done. So I'm not sure what's your blog about. Just kind of maybe we can come up with
some. Well, again, I'm interested in the academic community. Recently, the AAR, the American Association or Religion, added a section on esotericism. There's two new organizations, the American the Association for the Study of Esotericism in the U.S., and there's a European counterpart. And I'm interested in trying to coordinate all of these graduate students and professors who are actually teaching about disparate subjects who have an interest in this, and trying to get them to coordinate other than just the one conference they do every year.
Yeah. And I don't have an answer for it, but that's the kind of, some of the – you got to have to sort of noodle it out and figure out why. And it's hard. Jimmy Wales spent a year trying to get experts to write for Wikipedia. He got like 5 entries. They just wouldn't do it. And he had sleepless nights when he opened it up to the public, not knowing what was going to happen. Now more than 1 million just in English alone.
The 7-day Adventist had built a very nice platform on Dave TV called S7.Dave.TV, which seems to be...
What is it called again?
It's called S7.Dave.TV.
And what is this?
You know what Dave TV is?
No.
Dave TV. Ken Lipscomb, LITSCOMB, is a serial entrepreneur here, and he built it. And he licensed out the platform, so like there's an urban sports network, so like Morehouse College does all of their games. We're talking about the long tail, of sports, for example. You know, Morehouse College probably isn't going to make, you know, Saturday afternoon on NBC, but they now have their own network. There's also a, they did Stargate, and one of the movie studios actually has a platform just for Stargate. And so he licensed out the platform, and it's kind of a YouTube, but a little more sophisticated. And then he's building what I think is going to be very interesting is a company called Four Spots, which he's going to launch pretty soon. And he's creating a company that's going to be an intermediary between media buyers and publishers and media companies for the online video advertising space.
What's the URL? We're trying to find it.
I think it's www.dave.tv.
Okay.
3 W's.
It's just 7-day Adventist ministries.
That's what I was at a conference with the founder of this a couple of days ago, and he was talking about, he said it's S7.Dave.TV. It's a Mormon, I assume the 7-day Adventist is a Mormon church.
Yeah, we tried that and it didn't work.
It didn't work?
S7.Dave.TV.
It's misspelling.
Seven.
No, it's
seven.
The letter S, number 7. Mm-hmm. But then.
The letter S.
No.
What is smell of 77 up here?
Is it seventh
day? S-E-V-E-N-T-H? No, I didn't look up that. What did you say?
1B.
Almost there.
Oh, I'm going to give up on it.
No.
All right. On the other one. Yeah.
One of the things I found about community contribution, because I started the blog myself in magazine format, and I just gave the illusion that other people were writing for it, and that actually brought other writers. You know, I made up these fake people that were writing.
Okay.
And
look at the big pieces of paper we signed up on. They started with a fake name on top.
How do you know that? I signed it.
But, okay. Yeah, and then
to keep them, you know, I can't, you know, pay them out because I'll run it out of my pocket. But I do try to, you know, just reward people for, you know, helping me out. So, you know, I'll try to cover expenses when I can. If they do a movie review, I'll, you know, offer to pay for the ticket, or I'll offer to, you know, buy them dinner, do something small that shows that I'm not trying to exploit them because I'm not making any money off
right.
it. But I do appreciate the contribution.
And I think that people realize that. And there are all these little motivation tactics. I mean, like, you know, for a lot of the software people, they ask, why do you do it? You know, what motivated you? There's a lot of literature on open source software motivation. Fun is a big one.
Yeah.
Reputation. So, you know, if you contribute to that and you get your name, people get to know you. It's the community, you know, so you get to know, hey, especially if you get to be a little bit famous and they can write for your site and they, you know, and then they get to know the other people in the community. And sometimes it's for money. They might work for someplace else that wants to figure out how do they do this, you know, and so they come to work for you. That's what happened to some of the software movement. Some of the people who actually work for other companies would write the stuff so they could figure out how it was done. And so there's various motivational stuff, and there's a lot of information out there, but like that's what Jay said. Jay says a couple things that I really like. He says, if you build it, they won't necessarily come. That's the number one. And then the second one is this whole motivational thing. And then beyond that, though, the nice thing about open source that people don't realize is that it's successful because there's so many failures. So, and that means is that you go to OpenForge, the site, there's over 100,000 open source projects, but most of them just didn't get anywhere. And that's what makes it so successful, because things can start and they don't go anywhere, and then nothing. A big company can't do that. A big company can't have 100,000 failures. But in open source, all these people can fail and then some win, you know?
The company I work with, we're looking at various community management, content management systems, and other methods of using, you know, interactivity from videos to blogging. They are so against open source software because they're so afraid of the security issues. And I think anybody who really loves open source understands that security issues are usually dealt with. But how do you convince a corporate, you know, your corporate bosses that it's not as bad as they think?
Well, let's use Microsoft for a while. They weren't paying any attention at all to Linux, and then there was the Halloween memo that somebody realized that they were, you know, they were in trouble. Somebody visualized and saw that they couldn't do what open source could do, because in open source, let's say you need somebody who understands the little bit that you understand, just a little piece of it. Well, they don't have anybody necessarily that understands that one little piece. But you go out to the whole world and you have them. Another example of that is, this is Jay Rosen again, talking about Trent Lott got in trouble because bloggers overheard him talking about Jesse Helms. Was Jesse Helms with his
Strom Thurmond? Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond. Saying, and Trent Lott said, you know, it would have been a good thing if you had been elected, and this nation would be in a stronger place. Well, Jay Rosen says, you know, all of the people who were in that room, reporters, were in their 20s. They didn't have a clue what that era was like. But as soon as it got out on the internet, there were plenty of people who knew exactly what it was. And so at first when I read it, I thought, oh, you know, it's the bloggers jumping in and they're beating up on somebody. But it was a much deeper kind of thing. It was this intelligence that you don't normally have. So that's what I find kind of interesting about the so-called citizen.
Or John Kerry saying only dumb people go to their reps.
Yeah. Picked up. Yeah. There's a ton of them. The guy from CNN got it. Yeah.
I was just talking about the whole concept of the news is the blog sometimes. It is these different online mediums that we normally would be talking about making, but they often are the news. And I'll use the example this week from John Edwards' campaign and what happened with that, or some bloggers on his staff. That's to me another reason why mainstream journalism has to be looking at these media, not just as places for stories, but that those creating stories there have to know how to use them and how to integrate them into the process of telling the story. That's really another reason to do the kind of things we're talking about doing.
I realized that had to change. Because we were losing readership to other sources, and I thought, you know, they're not going to change fast enough. before we've got all the notes.
I got to ask you a question. Thanks for a comment. How in the world are you able to do something like you do today? I mean, this, I've learned more today just in the few minutes I've been sitting here and there than I learned in so many of the ones we attend these academic conferences when everything's planned. You have four presentations or 10 minutes, and then there are 5 minutes for questions. How did you make
David Weiner came up with this idea. He's the one who actually invented podcasting and blogging, I think, too. He's the most bizarre person you ever met. I was at one of these unconferences. This is the first one up in Nashville. And he led one on civil conversation on the internet. Now, if you know David Weiner, somebody said that's like having a drunk come in, fully right. drunk, into an AA meeting.
Yeah, he's crazy at times.
He came into this meeting, and he started talking, and two people were talking over here to the side. This is about civil. You know, it's impolite to talk when I'm talking. And then he went back over here, and then one of them smiled. And he said, "Are you laughing at me? How dare you?" And he started yelling at everybody in the room, and it wasn't a play act, you know? So finally he got so mad at everyone, he went in the back of the room when we took over. But that's where it came out. I mean, they've had these kind of blogger-thons around. And part of it, too, is fortunately I got this little endowed chair that was set up because the New York Times tried to buy out the Gwinnett Daily News one. I mean, they bought out the Gwinnett Daily News. They failed, but Mr. Fowler family got $100 million when newspapers, you could get that, and then they endowed this chair, and it gives me actually time to do this kind of stuff. That's what's built into it. So that's, it's a lot of, and a lot of the stuff we're talking about is, has to do with time and, you know, motivation. I'm really motivated to do these kind of things, and it took a lot of time.
The demise of large conferences, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the other part of it is, it's not me, you know, it's nothing. It's all of the people. I mean, it's the concept. You actually see the concept worked out in human individuals just in this room. And like I said before, they're doing that in other rooms. And so the problem is now they're in the other rooms, we're in here, but Jenny's going to fix them. Because Jenny's going to have it. This is why I'm so taken with what she's saying, is that after this conference, she will run some kind of program someday. And even though we're not there, we're going to be able to, there's going to be associations made to what they're thinking. And it's, I actually own this URL, the bigger brain, you know, and it really is. I think it's going to work like a brain. I think it's really going to work like a brain. What do you think? You think so?
Well, that's why I'm pursuing the technology. Because I think most data sources are locked up. You know, the collective knowledge in this room is so much greater than what's out there in a corporate data source.
Wasn't there that the thesaurus that first started with the whole semantic mapping and showing you all the connections?
I got a question about that. I mean, obviously, there's going to be concerns about privacy, information, and getting
That's
out
right.
and all that stuff.
So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, so I'm interested on what kind of thoughts there is in regard to, you know, privacy versus and proprietary thoughts versus the openness and the communicative aspect or the universal application, because I can totally see an unethical person just going in there, mining the whole thing, and then, you know, using it to market and or worse to people.
Yeah.
She works for a bigger company called SAP, but anyhow.
Yeah.
Which actually does all
that. Exactly.
The question you're after is if they already
Okay, 5 minute warning.
I understand, but there that at least that is a barrier in many cases. If you're talking about having it freely open.
I'm talking about if you want to make a data source open. Uh-huh. Now, quite frankly, not every data source should be open, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. I would never make my personal information open. That's one of the things that I do like about working for an international company. The laws in Europe are so much tighter from a privacy perspective. That it makes you have a real understanding of what should be private and also how rich public sources are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just know in my collective circle of colleagues that the knowledge that those people have is so valuable and completely unleverageable, particularly in a textual format. And the person who unlocks the semantic web aspects of being able to take text and make that machine searchable, really machine searchable, unlocks a lot of the keys to communication
agents have been around for a long time, and or the idea of agents. Nobody's really done one. I mean, I got like a every now and then I get an email from the AJC, their job search agent, sending me garbage that I just delete every time.
Right.
So I think it's laudable that we're trying, but the technology is not there yet.
And I know that's not the subject of this one, but I mean, isn't that that's a lovely segue into why businesses are looking at social networking, because most of the knowledge in their company is resident in the heads of their people, not in their database. And CRM has turned companies into organizations that manage data and not relationships.
How many people have read Wikinomics? How many people have read Starfish and the Spider?
Well, seen it.
Starfish and the Spider, because it's short, it's awesome, but what it is, it just talks about organizations and how spiders, well, if you break up a leg, obviously it's severed for good. However, in a starfish organization, starfish regenerate. They regenerate. And so it's decentralizing. And so the hierarchy is coming down and leveling out. And it's much more peer-to-peer all the way around. But businesses shouldn't be threatened by that. They should look at the new models who've been successful with that. It's very interesting. Yeah. There's lots of case studies in there, and I think you can really learn a lot.
What was the other? Wikinomics.
Stephen Johnson has a really good book called Emergence, and it's something like The Life of Ants, Computers, and Cities. And it's really kind of fascinating. Because he talks about ants, everyone thinks, well, the queen ant tells them what to do. Well, there isn't. Nobody tells anyone what to do in an ant colony. And yet all this stuff gets done. There's no leader in an ant colony, and there's no leader usually in cities. Cities tend to self-organize. People tend to find out the communities they want to live in and run those little communities. And so this stuff is... That's why I use that little thing about the analogy. Sitting at the campus here, and I'm one part of 20,000 people who made this thing happen. It's happening every day, and we think, well, why is it happening on the internet? Because our heads somehow now are on the internet, I think,
A lot of it in the academic community, there was just an online conference some people in Canada put on called Connectivism, and so it's beyond constructivism, and it's exploring the whole nature and development of knowledge, and also, so one of her speakers, Stephen Downs, he's like a theorist about networking and things like this, but the whole discussion was about, are networks sentient? Are they aware of where they're going and the patterns that are being created? And it's just interesting to think about it in those terms. But
I saw a statistic that I just read the other day. It's the 2006 Edelman Trust Barometer. Didn't know about it. It was a survey of 2,000 opinion leaders. It's E-D-E-L-M-A-N. A survey of 2,000 opinion leaders across 11 countries. And when these opinion leaders were surveyed, they said the most credible source of information about a company is a person like me. And in the U.S., this characteristic has grown from, that answer has grown from 20% in 2003 to 68% in 2006. In 3 years, that piece of, credibility, how I define credibility has just grown exponentially, which is why I think the whole phenomenon of social networking and why businesses are looking at it is because, they're trying to reconnect with their customers. They've got to do it in a way that actually creates trust and relationships.
Jeff Jarvis, he blogs Buzz Machine. He was at Davos, the economic service. And he was sitting in on sessions with like Bill Gates and a lot of these other people, and he realized they didn't seem to get it. They still had not understood the whole idea of build. They want to build this community. They want these people to work with me, and he thought that they didn't quite get the whole idea of sort of joining the community and integrating yourself into it somehow rather than controlling it.
John said the same things about WeMedia earlier this week in Miami. Big media companies, lots of suits, and
they don't.
Same thing they've been talking about the last 3 years.
It's amazing because if you go back to the journalism part, the larger part of the big media companies is they don't get it either. They don't understand, and actually even move into newsrooms and they don't get it in some ways. They don't understand. They believe that there's a barrier between the professional journalist and the
and their personality on the other side that interacts with the community, and they don't want to cross over that because they feel like it's going to change something.
Yeah. Well,
and it will, but it's...
Finish off, and then we got to close down, but go ahead.
But it will. But the thing is they don't realize it's for the better, that people are going to understand you, they're going to appreciate you, they're going to find you more credible.
A good example that they just had a digital online digital meeting with all our editors for magazines, and they left the
they do that. They do that.
Okay, with that, it's time.
Interested in podcasting? Want to mingle with other podcasters or learn how to get started yourself? Then mark your calendar for PodCamp Atlanta, happening March 16th through 18th at Emory University. For more information and to add yourself to the registration list, visit podcampatlanta.com. And by the way, it's free.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on magnitude.com. Thanks for listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of UnConcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.